You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Julie Squires about ways to build confidence in yourself and others. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2026 by Care Credit. Julie Squires is a certified compassion fatigue specialist and master certified life coach on a mission to transform the world of animal workers. As a young adult with a bachelor's degree in zoology, she worked as a veterinary assistant in a private practice until she eventually left for a career in veterinary sales and training, working for organizations such as Purina, Bayer Animal Health, and IDEX Laboratories. Years later, she returned to the practice where she began her journey in veterinary medicine and worked as a hospital administrator. Observing and experiencing the stresses for team members in veterinary medicine, she made a goal of helping others in the industry to thrive. She studied to become a master certified life coach and certified compassion fatigue specialist. Unlike most coaches out in the world, she works specifically with veterinarians, animal research professionals, and animal welfare advocates who face challenges unique to their industry. She understands what it takes to care and advocate for animals while meeting all the demands that come with that, both inside and outside of work. Whether coaching, speaking, or working with groups, Julie brings authenticity and kindness. Welcome, Julie. It is so good to have you with us today.
Oh, Dr. Grice, it is really my thrill and honor to be with you here today. And I just love that we got to meet. I have known about you for a very long time because we share, fun fact, we shared a hairdresser.
Yes, we did.
And for, I don't know, 20-some years, every time I get my hair cut, my hairdresser would say, now, you work with veterinarians, right? Do you know Dr. Amy Grice? And I'm like, well, not really. I mean, I know of her, but I've never met her. And then last year, we met for the first time. It was delightful.
Yeah, and we weren't even anywhere near where we used to get our haircut.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. We met in a completely different state. I know.
Yeah, I know. It was so cool. Really, really cool. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, this is great.
I'm so glad to have you here, and especially, you know, to talk about building confidence, because many early career and even some more experienced veterinarians struggle to feel confident about their skills, especially, you know, despite the extraordinary level of knowledge that they have accumulated. And then, like, I can remember, like, when you have self-doubt, you can feel a lot of stress. And you have lower levels of adaptability and increased levels of anxiety. So what are some deliberate steps a person can take to feel better? I know there's things.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes we forget to actually look at the facts of our life. We forget to look at the facts of our professional life. And so many of the people that I work with are so busy believing their thoughts and not looking at the facts, right? Because our thoughts aren't facts. It's our brain's job to question us. Because, I mean, think about it. Questioning us could make the difference between life or death, right? Like we come from descendants who had to question, do we have enough food? Do we have enough fire to stay warm while it's raining? But one of the things that I always take my clients through is we like do some fact checking. It's like, okay, you graduated vet school, right? Yes. Okay. You did an internship. Yes. Maybe you did a residency. Somebody demonstrated or somebody at some point you demonstrated your value and your knowledge and your skill base. And somebody signed off on that somewhere along the line, right? A fact is that self-doubt, it is human. And it also is part of our socialization. And, you know, I work almost exclusively with women, but I think it's also part of our socialization, even as men. If you think about the way we're all raised, the way we go to school in a traditional school setting, we are taught to all of a sudden doubt ourselves and believe that the teacher knows everything and that we virtually know nothing. And we kind of get set up in this dynamic of which, you know, we always feel less than. We always feel as though somebody knows more than us and it's somebody else's job to approve of us, to give us confidence. So sometimes just looking at what are the cold, hard facts that we could prove in a court of law starts to break down some of this subjectivity that our brain loves to latch onto.
Wow. I've never thought about it that way. It's such an interesting way to think about it. And you know what really resonated with me is when you said, there's always someone who knows more than you. Yeah. And I can remember the freedom that I felt when, you know, there'd be a foal with an infected joint or something. And, you know, I know what to do, but somebody else can do it better in a better setting. So I'd say, well, you know, you should probably take this foal to the hospital where they can do blah, 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 blah. And they would say, no, doc, you know, let's just do the best you can on the farm. And suddenly, like, there was this sense of freedom that, I mean, I did know what to do. And so we would do it. Yeah. And then, like, you do build confidence when you have that chance to, like, do it. And somebody says, hey, doc, just do the best you can. I know. I want you to do it, you know. And it is amazing, the freedom and the confidence that get built that way. It is kind of crazy.
And what grace that your clients give you too, to be like, hey, listen, you know what? Do the best that you can. And like, that's also signifying the trust that they have in you, right? Like we can all, for whatever our own medical needs are, you know, I can fly to the Cleveland Clinic or what, you know, I live in upstate New York. I could go to Manhattan or I can find something locally, right? It's like, there's always something that we would perceive as to be quote unquote better, but that doesn't mean that what you could do on the farm isn't adequate. Doesn't, you know, like it works a lot of the time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this has brought up a memory for me that is really powerful. I was a new graduate. Of course, I didn't do an internship because I'm of the generation where there weren't a lot of them. And anyway, I didn't do one. So I was new. I had done one castration in my life in school. Actually, not even the whole castration, one side. I got to do one testicle and the other, you know, another student to the other one. Anyway, so I have a client and she has a 2-year-old that needs to be castrated and I am terrified and she has scheduled it and it's me. And I tried to kind of push her off to one of the other doctors and she looked me right in the eye and she said, Dr. Grice, I want you to be the one because he likes you and I like you and you're the one. And I was terrified. You know, I was terrified. It was going to be my first time all by myself. But I knew what to do. And I did it. Yeah. And the amazing relief and realizing, yes, I could do it. And I did do it.
Yeah.
And So getting through that fear, fear has something to do with it, you know, with this confidence thing. Because if you embrace your fear and go forward, like, wow.
Well, and the funny thing about the fear is that what we're really afraid of, and this always throws veterinarians for a little bit of a loop, because at first it seems obvious that what you'd be mostly afraid of is, you know, the case not resolving the way you want, the patient not doing better. We think that that's what the fear is about, but it's really not. What the fear really is if if the case were to go south, if it didn't resolve, if even if the patient died, let's say, what we're really afraid of, or what you're really afraid of, because I'm not a veterinarian, is what you will say to yourself. It's the internal beating yourself up that is really where the fear comes from. But if you introduce self-compassion into this, which, you know, is a big piece of our relationship with ourselves, then things can change a little bit. And that doesn't mean that you're still not going to do the best you can, try the best you can. And when mistakes happen, which they will, you will be able to relate to yourself in a completely different way. It won't be, oh, you're so stupid, I knew you couldn't do this. It'll be like, it'll instead be like how you would talk to a friend. Oh my gosh, I am so sorry this happened. Wow, let's take a deep breath. Let's, you know, see what we need to do to support myself, right? It's a completely different way of being.
That is so true. Like the little voice when you're going there is like, you're not ready for this. Are you sure you really know what to do? That's the little voice. And then you're like, okay, I have to do this anyway. Yeah, it is the little voice for sure.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
I would imagine, maybe this is just, you know, I would imagine, for this is my own perception about this, right? And I have equine veterinarians as clients, but then there's also, you're talking about a massive animal. For some reason, that to me just seems like, I can just imagine how our brain would elevate the anxiety around that of like, they're just so big.
Yeah, I never had that.
Okay.
I never had that. It was more like I think it's kind of like imposter syndrome, which is common. So many professionals of all different stripes and types have imposter syndrome. And it's an interesting thing, like, because so many people have it at all levels of careers. I mean, you must have some people that you coach that have imposter. So how do you coach people through that?
Well, one of the things I always tell people is, you know what? Like, I don't know who we're kidding, but like, none of us really know what we're doing. Like, we're all just doing the best we can, trying every single day. Like, when you really think about it, we were born knowing nothing. We didn't even know how to walk. We couldn't talk. We couldn't add. Like, we forget all of the things that we've accumulated in our life, all of the skills and the training and the knowledge. And hopefully that continues to the day we die. So first, we just have to do some level setting of like, you know what? Guess what? You know, and it's not that we don't really know what we're doing, but it's like, but we're all also always touching that line of like, oh, wow, I've never done this procedure before. Or, you know, that's not my reality. My reality is, oh, I've never coached somebody on this exact situation before. But yet, it's also about recognizing that imposter syndrome, you know, first of all, giving it like this name syndrome, it sounds so big and scary. It's just a collection of thoughts that haven't really been challenged. It's a collection of thoughts like, I'm a fraud. I don't know what I'm doing. Others are going to figure out that I don't know what I'm doing. I have a client that she had a thought of, you know, I was a spousal hire and I didn't really earn the job. That's all imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And you said it before. You're like, people of all different stripes and everything. You're like, they say 60 to 70% of people have experienced it at least once in their life. But, what I thought was interesting was that they say that the research indicates that women tend to experience it more intensely in STEM fields, male-dominated professions, and in leadership roles. Well, I thought that was interesting because, okay, so, you know, veterinary medicine is STEM. veterinary medicine used to be male dominated.
Yeah.
And there's lots of leadership roles that you know, folks are also holding. So in answer to your question, though, once again, I coach my clients to question their thinking, is it true that I don't know what I'm doing?
Right. What a great question.
Well, because you can't, you know, it's like you can't even really argue with it. It's like, is it true that I, you know, don't know the anatomy of a horse? Is it true that I don't know where to actually inject their joints? Is it true that I don't know what colic looks like? And again, you know, I'm flying blind here.
Right. Yeah.
Non-horse owner, but you know, the things that I know, right? And when we start to really chip away from looking at things, or we start looking at things more objectively than subjectively, you start to break apart these limiting beliefs that we all have about ourselves.
Where does perfectionism fit in there? Because that's like a thing that people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a thing. And it goes right back to what we were talking about before. Perfectionism is based in fear, 100%. And it's that fear, once again, that if I don't, I'm hearing Brené Brown in my mind, right? She says, like, if we don't act perfect, look perfect, do it perfectly, then I'm going to beat myself up. Mm-hmm. So I have to try to, you know, everything that I do I have to be willing to or wanting to attain to some level of perfection that doesn't exist. And don't confuse it with excellence, though, because it's not the same thing.
Right.
Excellence is about, wow, I want to give and do the best job I possibly can. But perfection is like, is all about me. I can't make a mistake. Yeah. I've got to do it perfectly.
And I think, just thinking back over my own life as a perfectionist for a period of time, I think I'm pretty much to the other side of it, but it was a need for control.
Yeah.
And those needs for control usually come from trauma.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah,
you're going to keep yourself safe if you're in control. And that means, like, keeping your fists tight about everything. It has to be a very certain way, or else it isn't safe.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very true. Yeah. Right. Which when you look at it that way, you can really have some compassion for yourself too,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your inner voice can say, it's going to be okay if, you know, if there's something a little out of place, it's going to be okay. You know, if those sutures are not exactly spaced this many millimeters apart, or one of them goes a little bit not parallel, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Nothing bad's going to happen. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Pretty interesting.
It is. And another side of that, you know, I had an eating disorder when I was in my teens, and that was all about control. And it was all about control, like you're saying, it was control so that people couldn't say something about me that would inherently make me feel like I wasn't good enough, or that my body wasn't perfect, or whatever. Right. So it once again, it is a way to try to shield ourselves, right, from other people's judgment, which then in turn leads to our own self-judgment, which feels awful. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So many ways to tackle this.
You know, practice owners, usually they're a little farther along in their life journey, so they may have a little more maturity, who knows, or self-awareness, or not. But they often struggle to support and mentor their newer career associates in ways that are actually helpful. I would hope that the ones that are a little more self-aware are more helpful than those that aren't. But how can a practice owner or a mentor approach somebody who, you know, needs help and help them when they lack confidence? Are there any ways that that person on the outside can help?
Yeah, this is something I see a lot. And I think, first of all, that mentorship and support can mean very different things to different people. So I think it is crucial that we sit down and have a discussion with a new associate about what mentorship looks like for them, what support looks like for them. Because I can guarantee you, when we're dealing with different generations, we are not talking about apples to apples. We're talking about apples versus oranges. And I think you have to ask questions like, do you want to be challenged on a case that they bring to you? Or do you just want help at that point? Mm-hmm. How does this person handle overwhelm? How can we tell that they're overwhelmed? What would be helpful for them in those moments? And then I think it's super helpful to lay out for people, sort of just say, you know what, listen, being confident as a veterinarian takes time. Be patient with yourself. We're going to be patient with you. It's okay to whatever, like give them permission and make it psychologically safe for them to ask questions and for them to ask help for help when they get stuck. And then you actually have to be there for them when they ask for all those things.
Right, right. You know, so I was recently talking with some folks about this, and one of the things that I realized is that because new career veterinarians often like put their mentors on a pedestal and their the whole perfectionism thing that they have to be good enough, what really helped me to help others was to tell them the story of doing a PD block with Lutalice instead of Carbocaine, totally two different medications. You know, we all make mistakes.
Yes.
You know, and say, so somebody maybe almost makes a mistake or does make a mistake and they're devastated. Yeah. You know, that's really hard. And that's happened to me too. As this pedestal person, hey, you know, it happens to everybody. I'll tell you my story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So goodness, I love the asking the questions, because I think that changes things entirely to lay it out and say, what would help and how will I recognize when you need help and how do you want that help and all of those things.
Yeah.
That's really going to help people in understanding how to approach somebody, you know, to get, because you are so correct. We are not all the same. And what I might perceive as what you need could be totally wrong.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And not exactly what the person wants or mm-hmm. what they respond to. Because I think, you know, like we all have love languages and languages of appreciation, I think we also have languages of support and mentorship too.
Good point. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Right? Like one thing doesn't work for everyone. And I think what you said there is so important about being willing to, you know, talk about your mistakes or missteps. Like that just gives everyone permission to go, oh, Dr. Grace is human too. Good to know. She just didn't, you know, land on planet Earth knowing everything. And right. To your point, I think there's a lot of putting people on pedestals in veterinary medicine. There is.
Right. Well, yeah, because there's giants.
They're just amazing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah,
those giants put their pants on one leg at a time too, just like the
rest
of us.
There you go. It's very true. It's very true. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I think what I've been talking a little bit about today is what, you know, in the life coaching industry, we call thought work, right? So in this thought work, questioning thoughts, is it true? Being aware of what you're thinking. It's constant work. It's about not taking everything that your brain says as truth. And I think it's important to note that we all struggle to believe in ourselves. And we're all wanting someone to believe in us. And the great news is that who we really want to believe in us is us. So I want to just encourage your listeners to start practicing cheering themselves on. Start practicing high-fiving themselves after a good case outcome. Start talking to themselves like they talk to others. Right? We got this.
Yeah.
And I get that it feels a little weird at first, but we are all ultimately looking for our own, or longing for our own, I should say, longing for our own approval. So, you know, we have to be our own internal cheerleaders.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure in your coaching, you know, sometimes my consulting feels like coaching, or, you know, helping people in a very sort of basic thought way. Yeah. And I've said to them, after they've exclaimed some negative self-thought, I've said, would you say that to your best friend if she was struggling this way? And usually they say, well, no.
Of course not.
And I
right.
said, well, maybe you should consider whether that's an appropriate thing to say to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would a kinder, gentler version of you say to yourself?
Uh-huh. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. This has been so fun. Thank you so much for coming. Yeah, me too. Me too. Thank you, Julie.
And I don't want to tell our secret. That too. I don't want to tell our hairstylist that we have mutually together that your hair looks amazing. So whoever you have cutting your hair now is doing a great job.
Yeah, I will let her know. She always says that I am the luckiest person in the world because my gray is coming in like highlights.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is
pretty cool. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Dr. Grace.
Yeah, it is so wonderful. And thank you all for joining us as listeners for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thank you to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change, and speak nicely to yourselves.